welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Today is an unusually important show. My friend and CEO of Wells of Life, Nick Jordan, spent all of 2021 with stage 4 colon and lung cancer. The odds of survival were not good, but let's come to the end of the story right away. After two surgeries, four months of chemotherapy, 75 radiation treatments, 2 days of fasting before every chemo session, and a bout with shingles along the way, he has recently, in late December, been declared cancer-free. During the months of chemotherapy, radiation, and times of surgery, Nick had only his faith, his family, and his friends to lean on. And truthfully, all three were desperately needed because the reality of a potential impending death makes you realize the shortness of life, therefore forcing you to reevaluate everything you do and everything you believe. You know, I was reading the Bible, and in Psalm 19, there's a psalm that's written by Moses, which is not many people know, but Moses said, "Lord, teach us how short our lives really are so that we may be wise." We have much to learn from someone who has been close to death and has received great wisdom. Today, let's discover the value of life from the perspective of a very recent cancer survivor and a man who is moving forward with gusto, intention, and vision. Nick Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Charlie.
It's good to have you. You know, after my introduction, I hope our listeners caught that this show is not a downer. You know, you can do shows like this that can be a downer, but I really view this show as one of hope. It's about refocusing our lives on the few things that matter. And you certainly learned a few things that matter in life, didn't you?
Yes, it was quite the journey. When you laid it out the way you laid it out, it was a little easier. Go through it slowly, but when you put it all together in a couple of good, well-descriptive sentences, it did deliver a little scary, for sure.
Yeah. I know you weren't prepared for this questioning, but this is a good spontaneous question. I'm curious, can you describe to me the priorities of Nick Jordan in November 2021? 2020, when you discovered you had cancer, what were the priorities of Nick Jordan in those days?
It was late December in 2021 that I received that.
Right, 2021. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Diagnosis. After I steadied myself and my wife and I had a few moments of composure, the main priority was to get the very best medical team together that we could possibly find and do as much homework in as short a time space as possible and talk to as many key people as we could and ideally form our, I guess I want to use the word tribe, figure out, you know, who we were going to have on our team. And so those are a couple of the priorities that immediately, you know, spring to mind.
You know, I like those. Those are your priorities. But, you know, I'm trying to get at something just slightly different, Nick. And I think it was, this is 2022. So it was December 2020, wasn't it?
Yes, you're right. Yeah, December 2020 that I was diagnosed.
Yeah, because you went all through 2021, the entire year, under therapy.
Correct.
What drove your life before you had, you had a situation that made you reevaluate all of your priorities? What were the key priorities in your life at before you discovered you had stage 4 cancer?
Well, I've always had a busy life. and as the CEO of Wells of Life, that really was an all-encompassing role, a tough taskmaster. So I was certainly driven from early morning till late night, leading a charity spread across three continents, bringing the gift of water to those in need. And in addition to doing that, to building the charity, to be able to grow and expand. As far as from a standpoint of a home life, also having two teenage sons was also a very high priority, with both of them, you know, just basically taking steps out into the big world. And then just your normal, busy lifestyle that never seemed to have an awful lot of breaks and not too much vacation, because there always seemed to be another project, another task. And as you can appreciate, as an executive that leads a growing organization, you could work 24 hours a day and still not get everything done. So I was going at a very high velocity until I wasn't.
You know, I think the listeners, I think it would be helpful for the listeners to know that, you know, and if I'm getting too much into your personal life, forgive me, but I think it's important. Michelle is your second marriage, and your children are by another marriage, and there's some difficulty in seeing them. And you made monthly travels. For how many years did you go to North Carolina?
I traveled for almost 5 years.
5 years, every month for 10 days, you would fly to North Carolina, spend 10 days with your son. That's how committed you are to raising your children and to giving them a father in their life. And your love for your children is enormous. And so that all kind of, that had to come to a close in 2021, did it not? Because you could not travel.
It actually came to a close because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Essentially what happened was that both of my sons, for the very first time, came to live with Michelle and I in California, which changed the dynamic completely that you just described, because obviously looking back on it from the perspective of not having to travel, having to do that for 10 days every single month, except for summer, Christmas and spring break, it was very taxing. It was very difficult, stressful, tiring. We all know what the nightmare of travel looks like today. So for almost 5 years, yes, I definitely earned a few travel miles. But it was, again, it was for a very serious purpose. You know, being a dad doesn't work over Zoom or Skype or email. It's a it's an action verb. You have to be fully engaged and totally involved. And from where we stand right now, I mean, I'm a very thankful and happy dad, and I have two wonderful teenage sons that I'm very proud of and that I know love me very dearly and love Michelle dearly as well. So it was all worth it.
Yeah, I want to talk about love. I think love and gratitude and the experience that you've had with so many people have been so enriching for you. And I really want to get to that, but I want to kind of lay a little bit of a foundation. So I'm wondering, when someone first hears the news that they have cancer, and then they hear that they have stage 4 colon and lung cancer, which is not good news, what were your first thoughts in that? Is there a bit of denial, or did the real truth sit in soon, or did it take long or take a while for the truth to sort of sink into you?
Well, I can say that I had a little inkling going into, obviously, the colonoscopy. I knew that it was long overdue. And again, that was my mistake, my responsibility. So when I woke up with a doctor seated beside me in a white coat with a clipboard, yes, I received the news in picture form, in graphic color picture form, of what actually was growing inside of me. There was no question, a mention at that point of it having spread. So it was a mass, obviously, in the colon area. I didn't take it all in for quite a while. Definitely was in denial. And I don't know, it probably took maybe 2 or 3 days until Michelle and I got to spend time together. And, you know, she was wonderful, you know, and didn't put any pressure on me whatsoever. So it kind of unfolded. Things tend to unfold, you know, late at night before you actually drop off to sleep. Your mind does a lot of processing, as you well know, at that point. And so then when that reality came home to me, I realized that everything was going to change for the immediate future.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to know that you are not you're not somebody who sits around and is a couch potato and reads books and watches TV and hangs out. You are a very, very industrious, driven, high-performing, high-expectations person. And you had to come to an awareness that that had to be adjusted, didn't it? Some of that had to be...
Yes, I wanted to say that I believe, was one of the very biggest immediate changes. What you described is correct. Certainly somewhat of a hard-charging, hard-working individual. You know, love to hike, you know, love to enjoy the outdoors, and definitely try not to form an affair with the couch, for sure. Didn't actually need an awful lot from others, because the business, you know, the Wells of Life is in, is a service business. We serve others. And I'm was very fortunate to have never essentially had a single illness or disease or anything of the like. So health issues in the early 60s wasn't even a question mark. But what transformed very quickly was that I realized that I was going to be on the receiving end for quite some time. Instead of being able to serve others and give to others, I was going to be in great need of a lot of help, of a lot of kindness, of a lot of compassion, and most especially of a lot of love from my wife, my sons, my family, associates, and obviously a large group of Wells of Light donors. So a total change of the dynamic. You know, that really did happen very quickly. And I would have to say that that's been the saving grace. My heart will never be the same again because of what happened once I surrendered my own ego and will to thinking that I could form some sort of a gladiator mode and tackle this on my own. Only a fool would take on a thought like that, and I'm no fool. So the dynamic switched, and I'm sure it's what's happened to everybody, but it's what really set the wheels in motion for 2021, for the entire year, to be served.
I'm reminded of the comment that was made years ago and under a different context, but the line holds true, and that we will talk about it later, and that dealing with life, there is a sense in which the quote is correct in that it takes a village. It's not just a small family. It takes, and as you had, we will talk about your tremendous community of probably, Nick, 1,000 people or more. And it was that village that sort of inspired you, gave you hope, gave you love, gave you confidence. Would you not agree?
The language of Wells of Life, that became a fountain of giving. And yes, I don't know what the number is, because I candidly didn't try and keep track, but
right,
the numbers were staggering, and they kept coming and giving. And it's honestly, it's hard to, without getting emotional, it's hard to lay it out as to how incredibly good people were. And, you know, when people do things for you without you ever even having to ask, you know, you know that is a beautiful gift. And it wasn't just, like you said, you know, it wasn't just my close family. It extended beyond, you know, across the ocean, 9,000 miles. That was huge.
And I really want to delve into that a bit more deeply, but before we do, I have one sort of setup question that I think is helpful for our listeners to know, because our listeners, you know, have found out that, you know, you're in remediation and declared cancer-free. There's still all sorts of things that you have to do to be careful. But before we get to the learnings and what you're doing, I think it would be helpful if you could briefly describe what the chemo process was, and what your treatment process was, and I mentioned it earlier: 2 surgeries, 4 chemotherapies, 75 radiation treatments, 2 days of fasting before every chemo session, and then a bout with shingles before you went through this. Tell me about that whole treatment process and what that was like and what it was like driving 45 minutes every day to get your chemo, twice a week to get your chemotherapy. And give us an idea of what you had to go through.
Sure. Well, first of all, I was very fortunate to be referred to Scripps MD Anderson in La Jolla. My wife's youngest daughter, Katie, works at that facility. And we were very, very fortunate to be able to consult with the top oncologist, the head of surgery, and a most amazing radiologist. So if I was to choose in the perfect world the 3 top professionals in the country, I was able to receive the care, help, medical expertise from these 3 individuals. As far as the process is concerned...
Let me ask a question about that. What does that do to you psychologically to know, to trust your physicians to that degree?
I tell you what it does. It allows you to literally leap out of the nest and fly without a moment of hesitation, because we researched who was the top in their field. Darren Siegel, Dr. Worsey, and Ray Lee, they literally bring, 80 years of doing this cancer work to the table. And the stress level never rose, above a certain level because of their involvement. And it wasn't just their medical expertise, their humanity that underlay every single thing that they did at every appointment was there. That's what lifted me up, because very quickly, when you go into the medical world, you can stop feeling like a human being. You know, you can start feeling just like a body in a bed.
Like
that
a test tube. Yeah.
Yeah. It was never the case for me. The humanity that exists there at Scripps MD Anderson was amazing. So they installed a port in my chest, which is quite a neat sort of a deal. I used to kid my sons and say, this is where I plug in my iPhone sometimes. But it actually does allow.
So what is a plug in your chest? You have to explain that to those of us that don't understand.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually a port. It's called a super port, which allows the chemotherapy to be effectively introduced into your body without them having to find a vein every time, which, really eventually your veins get very smart and they run away and it becomes laborious for the nurses and the staff to find them. So I have a port in the right
side of my chest. That's a permanent port. I mean, until the process is over and they remove it.
But it is over, and it will be vacating my body very soon. But for now, it just happens to be still there. But once that was installed, and then once it healed, the chemotherapy is probably what most people really associate with curing cancer, certainly treating it anyway. And so I would spend 6 hours, basically sitting in a chair, relaxing, reading and doing whatever, and having chemotherapy drip, drip, drip into my body. Which some days is surreal, because what it is. It's poison, and it's actually going into your own body and attempting to kill cancer cells. So that happened over 4 months 3/4 of it happened before my surgery, and then the remainder of it happened after the surgery. That went on. It was very effective. Then what would happen is, after my 6 hours, I would return home. I would also return home with an electric pump and another bottle of chemotherapy, which over the course of the next 48 hours would continue to drip into my system. And then I would return on Friday and have the battery pump and the chemo bag, which was empty, removed. I should say that a perfect example of what made life so very, very easy was that, you know, my very good friend Jim Cunningham told me on day one, I'm going to drive you to every one of your chemotherapy appointments. I'm going to pick you up. I'm going to drive you there. You need never worry about anything except just simply sitting into the car, which, again, a gift like that, when you're not feeling well and when you've had, you know, 6 hours of chemotherapy, I have to tell you, that's just an amazing gift of incredible value. So that was the chemo. And then the radiation is another matter. It's basically 25.
I have a question on the chemo. Sure. And knowing you, you're pretty much incapable of sitting down for more than 30 minutes. You were such a driven individual. What was that like, Nick, for 6 hours to just frickin' sit there? I know you were on your phone a lot until all of your patients said, get the hell off the phone.
Well, let me just explain. My wife, Michelle, is an amazing woman who does a lot of homework. And before we even began this chemotherapy, she and I agreed that the best way to succeed would be to protect my body. Sometimes it's not cancer that actually kills the person. It's the actual treatment that's being used that's what kills the patient. So we were very adamant that she wanted to protect me. And she found a study from UCLA that really pointed to the fact that if you fasted for 60 hours leading up to each of the chemo infusions, it would greatly lower the damage that would come as a result of the chemotherapy. I did that. It's definitely what I call the chemo diet. I mean, it does help you lose weight, but I sincerely don't recommend it at all. But every single time I went for chemo, I had been fasting for the previous 60 hours. I must tell you, Charlie, that was probably the single greatest benefit to me, in the sense that I sat in a room typically with three other individuals, and none of them had any hair on their head. And I always felt a little embarrassed because I never lost a single hair. I still maintained all of my hair. In fact, it might have even got a little stronger. And I mean, that if that isn't a gift from God, I don't know what is.
Well, it's a gift from God, or it has to do with your orneriness that you just refused to let that happen. I'm not sure.
Either way, it helped. So that was essentially, so before every single treatment, Michelle would make sure and provide some bone broth, which I would never touch for the rest of my living days, but it served its purpose. Water, bone broth, and a little tiny bit of miso soup. Again, I really would like to just say that it gave me such an understanding that there are people that go to bed hungry every night. The first 24 to 36 hours when you are fasting and you're not taking on any solid food is pretty dramatic. You definitely notice the hunger pains. But it gave me an opportunity to know how blessed I have always been, to never go to bed worrying about food and to never go to bed hungry. So it served its purpose. I think it made me a little bit more aware that there are children tonight that will go to bed hungry.
Did you, I'm skipping some of the processes, but I do have more questions, but did you feel incrementally better, or is it just all feeling tired and concerned, is this working, or were there moments during the process that you felt hope, or did you just say for like you know, 8 or 9 months, I just have to hang in there. I'm not going to feel any better until this is all over. Were there high spots in it, or was it just a continual regiment of doing your discipline?
There were high spots, and there were certainly low spots. You mentioned in the introduction that I contracted shingles, which incidentally I had never heard of up until actually I got them and ended up.
And you got them. And you got them when, Nick? Like February?
Yeah, very early on. Really, I had just started a couple of chemo protocols. And then all of a sudden, during the chemotherapy, I got shingles.
And that's not good news.
That's actually very bad news.
Yes.
What ended up happening was I had to go to the emergency room at Mission Hospital. And there were some challenges and difficulties there because they gave me, obviously, a lot of drugs to counteract that, which unfortunately resulted in a colon blockage, which you do not want to have under any circumstances. And so for several days, I was in chronic pain, and eventually at 4 o'clock in the morning, my wife basically threw me in the back of the car and drove me to La Jolla in the middle of the night. And essentially they were almost going to do an emergency operation right there on the spot. And thankfully, we prayed seriously that that would not take place right there, because they were going to do a ileostomy, which would have been quite difficult.
Would you explain what that is?
Yeah, basically that's where they go in and they cut your intestine, and they take the pressure off the area where the damage is. In my case, where the cancer was, basically colorectal cancer. And so what they do is they essentially install the means for you to be able to live, which turns out to be a colostomy bag. And that becomes, you know, your way of living for the period of time that you have to actually function with bodily function before they, you know, return everything to its full working order. Now, that didn't have to happen. But what they did have to do is they had to install a stent. And that was, again, another operation, which I guess that would have been the third operation. They had to install a stent to open the blockage that resulted as a result of all of the heavy meds that I received during the shingles. So that really was frightening. There was a moment there where death was definitely hovering just a little bit too close for my liking. So, I mean, that was probably one of maybe three low points, and one of the biggest concerns, because I wasn't under the care of Scripps until I eventually got there. And, you know, it took a little bit of time for them to get things under control. But they did. And again, released me and then sent me back in the direction of the radiation.
And that, you know, also is the concern of, is this is the colostomy bag, is this temporary, or there still is a chance that you didn't know that it could be permanent? You could be like that for the rest of your life, having a colostomy bag. Is that not correct?
Well, you must have read my thoughts, because I would have to tell you with total transparency that thought absolutely both horrified and haunted me, because the surgeon, they do not mince their words when they're dealing with situations that are as serious as the one I was in. And I was told that if the cancer could be removed and if there was enough of a margin remaining for them to work with to reconnect the lower intestine, then things would be returned to normal. But if that was not the case, what you just described would indeed have been my new reality. And thank God it wasn't. But that thought really haunted me for a long period of time, actually.
Yes. I mean, that's... But you know what, Nick? I have to commend you, because during the time that you had the colostomy bag, I had no idea. You know, we saw each other several times, and you never complained about it. You never talked about it. As a matter of fact, you figured out ways to connect things and wrap yourself in duct tape or cellophane or something and take showers. You know, you just were so inventive, and that you know, there was something about you that you would not allow that to prevent you from living as normal life as possible under the conditions.
Well, you know, you have conversations with yourself, as you were well aware, and you know, when you go through this type of surgery and the like I said earlier, you must surrender your ego. You lose your dignity extremely quickly. So my point was, hey, let me just get over it. I am going to place myself, first of all, I should have said this earlier, but Michelle and I decided that we would place ourselves under God's care. I mean, that's where we live. We're a couple of faith, family of faith. But we agreed on day one that if it was God's will that I not make it through, then we dealt with that up front and early. And knowing that, you know, there was two boys involved, we wanted to sit down as a family, which we did. And I didn't want to have any surprises coming out of anywhere that my sons would have to deal with. So we headed it all up front. We talked about it. I have to honestly tell you that we kicked fear out of our house. We put it out and we made it stay out. And we would not allow it to rule or reign over our lives. And so we knew that this was what we had to face. And then from the standpoint of what followed that, then, you know, each of the things that happened along the journey, you know, they had their own ups and downs. But I just do want to say this, that you find out very quickly that the indomitable human spirit comes to the fore. It really does come to your aid and to your assistance. And you start searching for what is your reason? What are my reasons to live? I've never really had much doubt about that. But, you know, if I was to say what I feel really charted the course for success, so Michelle and I realized that we have a mission to be around for a long time. And so we were going to take every step we needed along the way without hesitation to get out the other end complete, whole, and renewed. And I mean renewed. I mean a new self. I am a new man today, better off and better than I was before I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Oh, you're heading right where I want to head, but I have you know, this is a direction I want to take to as we enter the second half of the podcast. But I do have one question that I want to ask beforehand, because I think it is so amazing, and I you know, it seems to me it was a very essential aspect of your healing, and that in your process, Nick, you had a remarkable host of supporters during your treatment. You know, you had literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people praying for you, sending you regular notes of encouragement, and they were from two continents or three continents. They were from Ireland, U.S., and all of our villages in Africa were praying for you. You know, thousands of people praying for you. What did it mean for you to know that people on three continents actually cared about Nick Jordan?
Charlie, that's so hard to describe, because it was candidly not a feeling that I had experienced all that often. But what I ended up feeling over the course of time was that, I have to say this because it's the truth, I felt God's love shining through.
How so?
I mean, that's what I felt.
How so? I mean, was it visceral? Yeah. Was it just you were utterly confident?
No, it certainly wasn't that I was utterly confident. It was in what people did. I mean, look, I don't want to single people out because it really isn't fair, but, you know, there's a thing called Caring Bridge that, you know, allows you to be able to keep people updated because you can't talk to everybody. That's right. The issue here. Like one person, my wife had so much to do. And so, you know, even if we wanted it, I couldn't talk to more than a handful of people. So Michelle did very frequent updates. And as a result, you know, people would send notes. I mean, I could actually have, you know, wallpapered probably one of the smaller rooms in the house with all the thank you cards, the mass cards, the get well cards, and the notes. There's one of my favorite donors. She's a 13-year-old girl. And she must have spent hours drawing a get well card, putting sentiments in it as to how much she needed me to live. And, like, there's no way that you can be on the receiving end of that without knowing that that's just love that's pouring out of people, which is God's love manifest through others. And, you know, the people in villages that I may never meet and that certainly may never meet me, you know, that would be on their knees, that would be praying, sending little messages, sending video. I mean, the team over there, I didn't ask for any of this. Because, again, that's not really in my nature. So when things keep arriving, people, friends, family, dropping off meals so Michelle wouldn't have to, you know, cook all the time. You know, it seems small when you say it, but what a blessing. I'm telling you, when you get a beautiful spaghetti bolognese on a Wednesday night and Michelle doesn't have to cook for a period of time, you just know that that's probably one of the greatest gifts that you can receive. So I don't know if I've answered your question. I really feel so fortunate, blessed. And look, obviously I'm almost in tears. So it tells you how much I appreciated that and how thankful I am.
Oh, I can't imagine the support of that many people. And I think it's important for our listeners to know that Wells of Life is... We're a growing charity, but we have this year in 2021 we have ended up serving right at 800, providing 800,000 people with safe and clean water. That's 800,000 people that they count on Wells of Life. They know Wells of Life is bringing that and changing their lives, and so. You, as representative, as CEO of Wells of Life, is a very important presence, and so you are, you represent yourself, but you represent a ministry, a service, a charity that is changing the lives of literally hundreds of thousands of people, and these people and the people there are so grateful for that. It's just amazing. And I also want to mention that we will put on the show notes, we will put Caring Bridge, that's a website that they need to know about. I have one question before we, I keep saying I want to get into what's the future look like, but I have one question and I want you to talk freely about the incomparable support you got from your wife, Michelle. Can you talk to me about Michelle?
Yes, I certainly can. So Michelle Jordan is a very loving, you know, wife and mother. She's a most prepared human being because no matter what comes, you know, in her direction, she is going to give it her best. And I guess what I have to say is that I'm not sure I would have made it through, Charlie. The best description of what Michelle Jordan did was I don't think I would have made it through all of this without everything she did. I mean, I couldn't even start to describe the sacrifices that she made, that, you know, she was at every appointment. You know, she cooked every meal. But probably more importantly, she was my cheerleader. You know, she never let my spirits drop. She prayed over me, you know, morning, noon, and night. And took care, you know, of Manus, our 17-and-a-half-year-old son, you know, who's going to Capital Christian, and ran her own real estate business on the busiest year of the real estate year in decades, and still never complained and never dropped her hands. So people love Michelle Jordan because they see that she is a servant leader that will do anything for those she loves. And I'm telling you, the day that I put a ring on that lady's finger, it was the smartest day of my life and the day that I thank God for every single day of my life.
And you know what else that I noticed that Michelle did is the research and advice and ideas that, I mean, it was just, she was nonstop on the computer and on the phone, meeting with people, trying to find out what are the best mediations to handle this type of cancer. And the information she had wasn't small. I mean, it was very, like your fasting, was very impactful information that she did. And it actually, you know, you think, it looks like it provided a role in your healing. I mean, that was so much work that she did, and she spent hours in research.
And made sure, you know, there's so much that goes along that keeps a person's body healthy. I mean, the amount of nutrition, vitamins, supplements, everything that was necessary for my body to heal. Oh, and she also directed me to take hyperbaric chamber treatment, which I did for about 2 months, again, which is a very wonderful healing process that, again, it heals the internal organs. That's where you are receiving 99% pure oxygen for 1 hour. And again, I would put that down to her research, and something that I contribute a great amount of value to as well, Dr. Murphy up in Newport Beach. So the last thing just on that, you have to have an advocate. Everybody needs a Michelle.
A single advocate, not a group, but a single advocate.
No, you have to have a single advocate. I mean, Michelle Jordan is the quarterback of the Jordan House when it comes to making sure that everything is done in its right place, in its right time. And she will fight to the death for her husband. And, you know, that's those are pretty powerful fighting words, but that's who she is, a true Texan.
Well, I'll tell you what we want to do, Nick. You know, we have covered the history. I want to cover, I don't want to call it the philosophy, but the learnings, what you have to offer, you know, what you've learned for yourself in your future life, and the advice that you have to the rest of us who have not experienced what you've experienced. And we need to listen to people who have experienced this. It was like the quote that I used from Moses early on, teach us how short our lives really are so that we may be wise. You learned how short our lives really are, and I believe you gained tremendous wisdom. So let's take a break. And then we will come back and we will focus on that area, okay?
All right, Charlie.
Hi there. You're listening to Charlie Hedges on The Next Chapter with Charlie, and we are in a very, very, very important podcast with my friend Nick Jordan, and we are discussing his trial, adventure, learning, and discovery through facing stage 4 cancer, and within 1 year, looking like he's declared cancer-free, and it's just amazing. And we've kind of focused on what you go through, what it's like for people who've not understood what it's like to go through that process. What I want to focus on now is I want to focus on our learnings and what Nick's learnings are and what he can teach us. So my first and second question are very similar. What do you feel you learned that will make your life different in the future?
I believe I learned the true value of what you can put a price on. And, I mean, simply put, the true value of taking every day and making the most of it and leaving whatever issues, worries, concerns, or cares, you know, outside and gone into the other place before you close your eyes. So I try and take a day for a block of time and really enjoy it. I didn't sleep that great last night, and I walked out at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I looked up, and it was a cold night. It had to be about 40 degrees here, and I saw the stars, and I was just truly filled with awe and wonderment. That was an unplanned trip, looking up at the stars, but I don't know if I would have had the same level of awe, wonderment, and appreciation, you know, a year and a half ago. But I just think it heightened my senses, and it has definitely taught me that this can all go very quickly, and there is nothing that we can take with us. And, you know, something along those lines where I don't take people for granted, and I certainly don't sweat the small stuff.
Amazing. That if we could only do that. Are you familiar with what I'm calling the philosopher's skull?
There
is something that I've wanted to do for a long time, in that the philosophers, especially the medieval philosophers, but before that, the philosophers, many philosophers would have a human skull on their desk, just a skull. And the idea of the philosophers, the great philosophers of old, was to help us realize what Moses said, that our life is short, we're going to die. And to have that skull there reminding them that each day is unique and it's a treasure. And and I think situations that occur to you really draw us to be thinking in that vein. And so I've got an odd question for you. I don't know if it's odd or not. We'll see. In your opinion, as you evaluate American life in general, life in your friends, however you want to do it, in your opinion, what values do you feel is most missing today in our busy lives? If you were a life coach, what priorities might you suggest to your clients?
Well, the one that's on the very top of my list, it didn't just happen because I contracted cancer, but it's heightened probably because of it. And that is loyalty. You know, loyalty to yourself, loyalty to your family, loyalty to God, loyalty to country. Because to me, a loyal individual is the greatest blessing that anybody can have close to them.
What does loyal mean? It's a big word. What does that mean? Because you and I have talked about this a bit, and loyalty is never a right, it's earned. What is that process in light of that, in light of what does loyalty look like and what does earning loyalty look like? How would you know, if you were coaching me on it, what would you suggest to me to do with regard to that?
Well, let me tell you, how it sort of manifests, you know, in my life and for me. I look at a person that's loyal as a person that's going to be around for a long time, that, you know, doesn't come and go. And I experienced, you know, the tremendous support, through loyalty of a very large number of people. I, in turn, make it my mission in life to be loyal to others, to those that I care about, to those that I am charged with taking care of and protecting. My MO is to be loyal to them and to have their back and to watch out for them and not to, you know, be a fair weather friend, as they tend to say, just to truly be a deep in the well person that's going to always watch over others. I don't know if that's a true definition of loyalty, but I guess I can only tell you what it means to me.
Yeah, and that's all I'm curious about. Is there a correlation between gratitude and loyalty?
Gee, I'm not sure. I mean, gratitude is something that I've experienced a huge amount of. I mean,
huge gratitude like, that you expressed to me over the last year.
Gratitude to me is a byproduct of everything that I have gone through, you know, in the course of the year. Like, you could not both have feelings of gratitude for being able to walk around standing upright, happy, whole, healthy, and being able to declare to family, friends, and everybody else that I'm cancer-free. I mean, the gratitude, it's almost like a flywheel, because the more thankful and grateful you are, the more you spin that wheel and the more of it brings on. And then you start beginning to, what's the word, like, you know, revolve in that state of thankfulness, gratitude, you know, being mindful of, you know, the love of others and, you know, how it actually shows up. So there's so many channels that have kind of opened up in my life that, you know, I may have been minutely aware of, but I don't think that there was ever an opportunity for them to kind of be cut deep. And these channels have changed my heart forever, never be the same. And that's the way I want to live my life because of this. And this is not an experience that you kind of jot down a few notes in a book about.
Right.
This is a new person. I am a new person. You know, minus a few parts, but whole, healed, and secure in the knowledge that, you know, whatever number of years I have left, I'm going to live them with greater love, determination, gusto, appreciation, and hopefully make an even, you know, bigger impact, you know, than I've made in the past. It's created, I think, almost an insatiable appetite to do good. And to be used for a mighty purpose.
That's a goal for all of us. That is something all of us would benefit from. And we're not all going to experience what you experienced, but we need to learn from those that have experienced that. So we need to listen to your words and experience that. Listen, you are CEO and chief fundraiser of Wells of Life. I don't want to tell the results. Tell me, you're kind of like, you know, the way we set it up, we're disseminating the power and growing into a much bigger charity. But right now, you are the face and the action of the charity. So if you're out of service a third to half to not quite two-thirds of the year, how was Wells of Life impacted by your off again and on again work schedule? Did that have any negative impact on Wells of Life?
Well, not in the final analysis. No, actually, it didn't, because, you know, the first thing that occurred to me in early January of last year, when my wife Michelle and I had to announce to the executive board of Wells of Life that I had cancer. That's a pretty tough bit of news to have to deliver to anybody at any time. But while delivering that, I never felt more confident that God wasn't going to let Wells of Life suffer because of my suffering. In fact, I had the true belief that He was going to bless Wells of Life abundantly through me and because of anything that I would experience. And you know, I looked around me, and all I could see were people that had a desire to step up, to move forward, to do more, to be more. And that really gave me such joy to know that if you can't stand out of the front line for a year in any organization, then you're not doing a very good job of creating an organization that has strength and endurance. I was lifted up and carried forward in 2021, and we had our most successful year ever.
Yeah, what did our revenue increase by?
Well, we had a goal originally. I can simply say it. I mean, the board is so understanding and said, you know, why don't we, you know, set a more attainable goal than perhaps we would ordinarily, which would have been, why don't we set a $1.6 million goal of total receipts? And I was totally adamant that we would not do that. And I reset the goal with their, of course, agreement at $2 million. And now everything you described is true. I mean, that probably looked like a little bit of a stretch, not knowing between COVID and the two C's, COVID and cancer. But I have to tell you that if you have a big enough, you know, why, you can do anything. And I truly believe that Wells of Life was going to have its best year, and I was going to be able to heal. And that's what happened. We had our most amazing fundraiser, Balboa Bay Club. We raised over $1.8 million in less than 6 hours. Never been done before. Absolute joy in abundance, water flowing, and people, I think, genuinely in awe, not of me, but of Wells of Life and how God has blessed it. And, you know, I haven't used the word faith very often, but I'm going to use it right now because I have faith. And I didn't always have as much as I have right now. And I kind of had an idea of what it looked like. And having two teenagers, my responsibility and role as a father is to model and to teach them the Christian values that we both believe in, my wife and I. And I have to tell you, like any dad dealing with teenagers, I really struggled because it's not that easy to read it out of a book. I saw my cancer journey as a faith walk. I saw it as an opportunity to be able to model what actual faith looked like to my sons. And instead of, you know, cursing God and being angry and, you know, being upset as to why would it happen to me after all the good I've done, and oh, I'm sure there could have been a whole soliloquy of giving out that I could have gotten into, I went in the opposite direction. I really opened my heart and said, Lord, let my sons see their father walking faithfully, following your word. And that's what the year really manifests. And what a gift. I have two boys, seeing their dad, you know, fighting bravely, supported by so many, being loved, and, you know, almost put like into a little capsule that I think these young men will never forget. Because they can look back when they come in times of adversity, which they will be challenged so many times, they'll be able to look back and say, hey, my dad went through tough times, and he got through it, and we got through it as a family, so I can do it too.
What learning that's for your kids?
Oh, again, it doesn't come out of a book. You can't teach it. You have to model it, and truly, Michelle and I walked through that valley, and that was the mountaintop that we were able to stand on with the boys and let them see that this is what God does to those who honor his word.
You know, one of the things I see too as an outsider, well, outsider, because I'm pretty involved in all of this, is that you asked your team is going to have to step in and fill in the blanks, fill in the areas that you can't, and that, you know, because of your health, there are certain things that need to be done. And, you know, we just have to commend, you know, it's difficult to name names, but we have to commend certain people for just really doing such an incredible job. You know, I'm thinking of the Pete Callahans, who was our chairman of the board, Adrian Laurento, who is country director in Uganda. And then Ashley Brigham, who's our director of operations, who just covered the United States, you know, covered all of our marketing materials and managing the great staff. You had all these people just going an extra mile, and that with the hand of the Lord and with your guidance, it just turned out incredible. So I have one final question, and then we're done. My question is, how do you see your role in the charity, as a father, as a husband, evolving after this cancer experience?
You have asked some really great questions today, and that is a real doozy. So I'll give you my very best effort of an answer, and that is, I said it several times earlier that my heart will never be the same. I've experienced a greater level of empathy, understanding, and kindness than I think that I've had the experience of prior to this. I mean, I can deal with them one at a time. I mean, it makes me certainly a better husband to Michelle. There's no question about it. I will spend the rest of my life thanking her and remembering all of the things she did. As far as the boys are concerned, I mean, that's a bond that will never be broken, a memory that will never be erased. And it's an opportunity for them to be able to see a dad, you know, do whatever he did. And then as far as the charity is concerned, that's probably the biggest takeaway of all. And that is, all the nights that I couldn't sleep and all the hours in the chair getting chemotherapy, thinking about how can Wells of Life become the most dynamic, impactful, and successful charity in the world, bringing water, solving the water crisis, blessing people that need water and deserve water. I would say I've probably had more creative thoughts and ideas with greater clarity than ever before as a result of the time frame that has gone through here. And so obviously you'll have to wait for another podcast to find out how they're going to manifest. But it means that I am not afraid to step out of the way. There's great people at Wells of Life, and there'll be more great people that will be able to help us grow and scale ourselves into a level where, mark my words, Wells of Life will be known from the East Coast to the West Coast and from the Canadian border down to Mexico as the charity where you can surely change the world by bringing water to those in need. And you do it in Jesus' name, because we're an unashamed and very proud and very thankful Christian NGO.
Very well said. Thank you. Thank you for that. Nick Jordan, as always, you're a brilliant guest on our podcast. And, you know, and I want to thank you for the information, for your candor and your wisdom today. You are a beacon of hope. God bless you, Nick.
Thanks for just asking incredible questions, Charlie. And, you know, I really appreciate not having a clue what you were going to ask, because I mean, the only answer that can come is what's in your heart. And there wasn't a single prepared answer delivered there. So thank you for giving your listeners the unfiltered best opportunity to hear it straight from the heart from Nick Jordan.
Okay, how would you like people to get in contact with you, Nick, for information?
I'll do two things. Our website is a tremendous option, which is wellsoflife.org, wellsoflife.org, and you'll put this in the show notes. And, you know, I always invite people to call me. I always give out my cell phone. I have no hesitation. If I can help you, and I don't just mean Wells of Life, if I can help you at a tough time here, if you're going through cancer, if you're starting out, if you need a little bit of help, a little bit of guidance, anything that I have, I will give to you freely. Anything Michelle has learned, we will give away freely. If I can just help one person, it'll make this podcast so much worth it. So it's 949-584-6166. Call me if I can help, if I can be of service, and if I can light your path a little bit, it'd be my honor and pleasure to do so.
Well, Thank you so much. I appreciate I so appreciate you and all you're doing, and I'm looking forward to working with you in the future. Okay, everybody,
thank you for
joining us on our podcast. I hope this was helpful for you. Please share it with friends, because I think this is information that is not common out there on your podcast circuit, and I think it's very helpful for everybody. And I just want you to let you know that you can get a hold of me at thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.